Chapter 44. A Message from El Herrera. The enforced passivity of their defense, the interminable waiting, became insupportable. Day and night they heard the muffled thud of the picks above and dreamt of the collapse of the grotto and of every ghastly eventuality. They were subject to castle mentality in its most extreme form. Robin Fedden, Crusader Castles.
"They've stopped digging, Hazelrar," said Speedwell. "As far as I can tell, there's no one in the hole."
In the close darkness of the honeycomb, Hazel pushed past three or four of his rabbits, crouching among the tree roots, and reached a higher shelf where Speedwell lay listening for sounds from above. The Effrophants had reached the hangar at early twilight, and had once begun a search along the banks and among the trees to find out how big the warren was and where its holes were. They had been surprised to find so many holes in such a small area, for not many of them had had experience of any warren but Ephrapha, where a very few holes served the needs of many rabbits. At first, they had supposed that there must be a large number of rabbits underground. The silence and emptiness of the open beechwood made them suspicious, and most kept outside, nervous of an ambush. Woundwort had to reassure them. Their enemies, he explained, were fools who made more runs than any properly organized warren needed. They would soon discover their mistake, for everyone would be opened until the place became impossible to defend. As for the droppings of the white bird, scattered in the wood, it was plain that they were old. There were no signs whatever that the bird was anywhere near. Nevertheless, many of the rank and file continued to look cautiously about them. At the sudden cry of a peewit on the down, one or two bolted and had to be brought back by their officers. The story of the bird which had fought for Threlli in the storm had lost nothing in the telling up and down the burrows of Ephrapha. Woundwort told Campion to post sentries and keep a patrol round about, while Vervain and Grounsel tackled the blocked holes. Grounsel set to work along the bank, while Vervain went into the wood, where the mouths of the holes lay between the tree roots. He came at once upon the open run. He listened, but all was quiet. Vervain, who was more used to dealing with prisoners than with enemies, ordered two of his rabbits to make their way down it. The discovery of the silent open run gave him the hope that they might be able to seize the warren by a sudden dash to the very center. The wretched rabbits, obeying his orders, were met by Silver and Buckthorn at a point where the run opened out. They were cuffed and mauled and barely got out with their lives. The sight of them did nothing to encourage Vervain's party, who were reluctant to dig and made little headway during the darkness before moonrise. Grounsel, who felt that he ought to set an example, himself dug his way into the loose fallen soil of one of the bank runs. Plowing over the soft earth like a fly on summer butter and holding his head clear, he suddenly found himself face to face with Blackavar, who sank his front teeth into his throat. Grounsel, with no freedom to use his weight, screamed and kicked out as best he could. Blackavar hung on, and Grounsel, a heavy rabbit, like all the Ephrophan officers, dragged him forward a short distance before he could rid himself of his grip. Blackavar spat out a mouthful of fur and jumped clear, clawing with his front paws. But Grounsel had already gone. He was lucky not to have been more severely wounded. It became clear to Woundwort that it was going to be extremely difficult, if not impossible, to take the warren by attack down the defended runs. There would be a good chance of success if several runs could be opened and then tackled at the same time, but he doubted whether his rabbits would attempt it after what they had seen. He realized that he had not given enough thought earlier on to what he would have to do if he lost surprise and had to force an entry. He had better give it some thought now. As the moon rose, he called Campion in and talked it over with him. Campion's suggestion was that they should simply starve the warren out. The weather was warm and dry, and they could easily stay 2 or 3 days. This Woundwort rejected impatiently. In his own mind, he was not altogether certain that daylight might not bring the white bird down upon them. They ought to be underground by dawn. But apart from this secret anxiety, he felt that his reputation depended on a fighting victory. He had brought his Ousler to get at these rabbits, knock them down, and beat them. A siege
would be a miserable anticlimax. Also, he wanted to get back to Ephrafa as soon as he could. Like most warlords, he was never very confident about what was going on behind his back.
"If I remember rightly," he said, "after the main part of the warren at Nutley Copse was taken and the fighting was as good as over, there were a few rabbits who shut themselves into a smaller burrow, where it was difficult to get at them. I said they were to be dealt with, and then I went back to Ephrafa with the prisoners."
"How were they dealt with, and who did it? Do you know?"
"Captain Mallow did it," said Campion. "He's dead, of course, but I expect there's someone here who was with him. I'll go and find out."
He returned with a heavy, stolid, ousler sentry named Ragwort, who at first had some difficulty in understanding what it was that the general wanted to know. At last, however, he said that when he had been with Captain Mallow more than a year ago, the captain had told them to dig a hole straight down into the ground. In the end, the earth had given way under them, and they had fallen down among some rabbits whom they had fought and beaten.
"Well, that's about the only way it can be done," said Woundwort to Campion. "And if we get them all onto it, relieving each other in shifts, we should have a way into the place before dawn. You'd better get your sentries out again, not more than two or three, and we'll make a start at once."
Soon after, Hazel and his rabbits, below in the honeycomb, heard the first sounds of scratching above. It was not long before they realized that the digging was going on at two points. One was at the north end of the honeycomb, above the place where the tree roots formed a kind of cloister in the burrow. Here the roof, latticed through and through with fine roots, was very strong. The other seemed to be more or less above the open center of the honeycomb, but rather nearer to the south end, where the hole broke up into bays and runs with columns of earth between. Beyond these runs lay several of the warren's burrows. One, lined with fur torn from her own belly, contained clover and the pile of grass and leaves covered over with earth in which her newborn litter was sleeping.
"Well, we seem to be putting them to a great deal of trouble," said Hazel.
"That's all to the good. It'll blunt their claws, and I should think they'll be tired out before they've done. What do you make of it, Blackberry?"
"I'm afraid it's a bad lookout, Hazelrah," replied Blackberry. "It's true they're in trouble up at the top end. There's a lot of ground above us there, and the roots will hold them up for a long time. But down this end it's easier for them. They're bound to dig through fairly soon. Then the roof will come in, and I can't see that we can do anything to stop them."
Hazel could feel him trembling as he spoke. As the sounds of digging continued, he sensed fear spreading all through the burrow.
"They'll take us back to Ephrafa," whispered Vilthuril to Thethuthanang. "The warren police."
"Be quiet," said Heisenthley. "The bucks aren't talking like that, and why should we? I'd rather be here now, as we are, than never have left Ephrafa."
It was bravely said, but Hazel was not the only one who could tell her thoughts. Bigwig remembered the night in Ephrafa when he had calmed her by talking of the high downs and the certainty of their escape. In the dark, he nuzzled Hazel's shoulder and pressed him over to one side of the wide burrow.
"Listen, Hazel," he said. "We're not finished yet, not by a long way. When the roof breaks, they'll come down into this end of the honeycomb, but we can get everybody back into the sleeping burrows behind and block the runs that lead to them. They'll be no better off."
"Well, if we do that, it'll last a bit longer," said Hazel, "but they'll soon be able to break into the sleeping burrows once they're in here."
"They'll find me there when they do," said Bigwig, "and one or two more besides. I shouldn't wonder if they didn't decide to go home."
With a kind of wry envy, Hazel realized that Bigwig was actually looking forward to meeting the Ephrafan assault. He knew he could fight, and he meant to show it. He was not thinking of anything else. The hopelessness of their chances had no important place in his thoughts. Even the sound of the digging, clearer already, only set him thinking of the best way to sell his life as dearly as he could. But what else was there for any of them to do? At least Bigwig's preparations would keep the others busy and perhaps do something to dispel the silent fear that filled all the warren.
"You're quite right, Bigwig," he said. "Let's prepare a little reception. Will you tell Silver and the others what you want and get them started?"
As Bigwig began to explain his plan to Silver and Holly, Hazel sent Speedwell to the north end of the honeycomb to listen to the digging and keep reporting what he could make out about its progress. As far as he could see, it would make little difference whether the roof fall came there or in the center, but at least he ought to try to show the others that he was keeping his wits about him.
"We can't break these walls down to stop the run between Bigwig," said Holly. "They hold the roof up at this end, you know."
"I know that," answered Bigwig. "We'll dig into the walls of the sleeping burrows behind. They'll need to be bigger anyway, if we're all going to get in there together. Then kick the loose earth back into the spaces between the columns. Stop the whole thing right up."
Since he had come out of Ephrafa, Bigwig's standing was very high. Seeing him in good heart, the others set aside their fear as best they could and did as he told them, enlarging the burrows beyond the south end of the honeycomb and piling up the soft earth in the entry runs until what had been a colonnade began to become a solid wall. It was during a pause in this work that Speedwell reported that the digging above the north end had stopped. Hazel went and crouched beside him, listening for some time. There was nothing to be heard. He went back to where Buckthorn sat guarding the foot of the single open run, Kahar's Run, as it was called.
"You know what's happened," he said. "They've realized they're all among the beech roots up there, so they've chucked it. They'll be going harder at the other end now."
"I suppose so, Hazel-Ra," replied Buckthorn. After a little, he said, "Do you remember the rats in the barn? We got out of that all right, didn't we? But I'm afraid we shan't get out of this. It's a pity, after all we've done together."
"Yes, we shall," said Hazel, with all the conviction he could muster. But he knew that if he stayed, he would not be able to keep up the pretense.
Buckthorn, a decent, straightforward fellow, if ever there was one, where would he be by Neafrith tomorrow? And he himself, where had he led them with all his clever schemes? Had they come over the common, among the shining wires, through the thunderstorm, the culverts on the great river, to die at the claws of General Wundwert? It was not the death they deserved. It was not the right end of the clever track they had run. But what could stop Wundwert? What could save them now? Nothing, he knew, unless some tremendous blow were to fall upon the Ephrafans from outside, and of that there was no chance. He turned away from Buckthorn. Scratch, 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 scratch came the sound of the digging above. Crossing the floor in the dark, Hazel found himself beside another rabbit, who was crouching silently on the near side of the new piled wall. He stopped, sniffing. It was Fiver.
"Aren't you working?" he asked listlessly.
"No," replied Fiver. "I'm listening."
"To the digging, you mean?"
"No, not the digging. There's something I'm trying to hear. Something the others can't hear. Only I can't hear it either. But it's close. Deep. Leaf drift deep. I'm going away, Hazel. Going away."
His voice grew slow and drowsy.
"Falling. But it's cold. Cold."
The air in the dark burrow was stifling. Hazel bent over Fiver, pushing the limp body with his nose.
"Cold," muttered Fiver. "How? How? How cold?"
There was a long silence.
"Fiver," said Hazel.
"Fiver, can you hear me?"
Suddenly a terrible sound broke from Fiver, a sound at which every rabbit in the warren leapt in dreadful fear. A sound that no rabbit had ever made, that no rabbit had the power to make. It was deep and utterly unnatural. The rabbits working on the far side of the wall crouched terrified. One of the does began to squeal.
"Dirty little beast!" yelped Fiver. "How? How dare you? Get out! 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 Out!"
Bigwig burst through the piled earth, twitching and panting.
"In the name of Frith, stop him!" he gasped. "They'll all go mad!" Shuddering,
Hazel clawed at Fiver's side.
Wake, Fiver, wake!
But Fiver was lying in a deep stupor. In Hazel's mind, green branches were straining in the wind. Up and down they swayed, thresh and ply. There was something, something he could glimpse between them. What was it? Water, he sensed, and fear. Then suddenly he saw clearly, for an instant, a little huddle of rabbits on the bank of a stream at dawn, listening to the sound of yelping in the wood above and the scolding of a jay.
If I were you, I shouldn't wait until Neafreath. I should go now. In fact, I think you'll have to. There's a large dog loose in the wood. There's a large dog loose in the wood.
The wind blew. The trees shook their myriads of leaves. The stream was gone. He was in the honeycomb, facing Bigwig in the dark across the motionless body of Fiver. The scratching from above was louder and closer.
Bigwig, said Hazel. Do as I say at once. There's a good fellow. We've got hardly any time. Go and get Dandelion and Blackberry and bring them to me at the foot of Kihar's run. Quickly!
At the foot of the run, Buckthorn was still in his place. He had not moved at Fiver's cry, but his breath was short and his pulse very quick. He and the other three rabbits gathered about Hazel without a word.
I've got a plan, said Hazel. If it works, it'll finish Woundwort for good and all. But I've no time to explain. Every moment counts now. Dandelion and Blackberry, you come with me. You're to go straight up out of this run and through the trees to the down. Then northward, over the edge and down to the fields. Don't stop for anything. You'll go faster than I shall. Wait for me by the iron tree at the bottom.
But Hazel, said Blackberry.
As soon as we've gone, said Hazel, turning to Bigwig, you're to block this run and get everyone back behind the wall you've made. If they break in, hold them up as long as you can. Don't give in to them on any account. El Herrera has shown me what to do.
But where are you going, Hazel? Asked Bigwig.
To the farm, said Hazel, to gnaw another rope. Now, you two, follow me up the run and don't forget, you stop for nothing until you're down the hill. If there are rabbits outside, don't fight, run.
Without another word, he dashed up the tunnel and out into the wood with Blackberry and Dandelion on his heels.